Hello, I'm Wilco Johnson, and you're listening to Cat Tales.
You're listening to Cat Tales.
Hi, you're listening to Cat Tales, and I'm Cat. This tale is about a legendary guitar hero who has officially cheated death. To successive generations of guitar aficionados, Wilco Johnson is a cult figure in the rock world. He's been a blockhead and a founding member of Canvey Island's most celebrated punk precursors, Dr. Feelgood, whose unwavering devotion to old-fashioned rhythm and blues and Wilco's explosive guitar playing inspired everyone from Paul Weller to Joe Strummer. Life made a cruel twist in 2012 when Wilco was diagnosed with terminal pancreatic cancer, but it led to the most extraordinary year of his life, which started with a farewell tour, included a part in Game of Thrones and an album with Roger Daltrey, and then culminated in the most surreal experience of all, a cure. This is The One with Wilco Johnson. Well, first of all, I'm going to say welcome to the show, Wilco. I met you about, oh Lord, it must be about 14 years ago. And it was backstage when you were playing with the Blockheads in Market Harborough.
Yes.
Now, you're not going to remember that, but I remember it distinctly.
I hope nothing outrageous happened.
No, it didn't. You were most gentlemanly. We had a lovely old chin wag backstage, and you were performing with the Blockheads, which obviously you've done quite a bit of. But you're actually now touring with some ex members of the Blockheads, aren't you? Because you've got Norm Watroy and you've got Dylan Howe as well. It's
yes.
Obviously a friendship that goes back a long time. Does that make any difference with the music that you produce?
I've been playing with Norman so long now. I mean, since hundreds of years, and we're just very good friends. And I can't imagine playing without Norman. I mean, apart from the fact he's the best bass player anywhere, he's great, and. Yes, Dylan happens to be another ex-blockhead. I was never he was after my time in the Blockheads, but he is he's a great drummer. He's such a great drummer. So I mean, I've got a three-piece band. I've got, you know, like, I'm just an old skiffler, really. You know, I've got these two guys, you know, it's just fantastic. I could stand there and wave my arms about, and it would sound great, just them two, you know. Yeah.
They can pick up the rest of it, can they, and do the twiddly bits in between your twiddly bits, and it all sounds great. Well, do you know, you've got such a long and varied career, haven't you? I mean, how old are you now? May I ask that, Wilco? Because you certainly don't look the age that I think you are.
I'm just about to become 75.
Wow, that's amazing. You do not look that. You really don't. But of course, you weren't actually supposed to still be here, Wilco. Does that feel surreal?
Yeah, I mean, it works. It's incredible. And I became 75 in like about 5 minutes. You know, that was all 10 years ago or something. It was in you're talking about the cancer.
I am, yes, because it's such a remarkable story.
It was, in fact, yes, I mean, it's just weird. It was a weird thing that happened to me. It's something like 10 years.
Amazing.
It was a fantastic time for me. Just the whole thing. I got this peculiar lump on my stomach, and I was treating it by ignoring it and hoping it would go away.
Yes, as many men do.
Then one day my son came to visit bring the brought his family to visit. He lives in Dubai, and they'd come over, and he saw it, and he was well, and he grabbed hold of me. You were going down the hospital, dragged me to the hospital, and they looked at it, and then a couple of days later, we went in, and the guy said, told me that I'd got pancreatic cancer, and that there was nothing they could do. It was inoperable, and that I'd got less than a year to live, a few months. And I don't know, I suppose we all, you know, must have wondered what we would feel if that happened to us. Yeah. You know, like, how would I feel if the doctor told me that? And actually how I felt was, and when he said it, I felt absolutely calm.
Wow.
And I went, oh, right. And the doctor said a few, you know, explained a bit about it. And then I walked home, and I lived quite near the hospital. I remember walking out of the doors of the hospital in this kind of, some kind of reverie. And it was an absolutely beautiful winter's day. Mm. And I remember looking up at this clear sky and seeing the bare trees against the sky. And it looked so beautiful. It was just, I felt great. I was looking all around me, and even the trash on the ground and everything seemed to be radiant, you know. And I was walking along, just feeling ecstatic. And I was thinking, blimey, I feel really good. This must be some kind of a delayed shock situation. Come, I'll probably get indoors and collapse. Collapse into a gibbering heap, you know. But I didn't. I just felt absolutely great. And I think it was night. I was free from the, you know, we all live under the threat of death. We're all going to die. Mm. And this sort of thing of just knowing, right, the thing's not a mystery anymore. It's sorted out, you know. Maybe that was it. I don't know. I felt great. And it was the start of one of the best years of my life.
Oh, Wilkie, that's just incredible. Did it kind of make you suddenly feel connected to everything else, or did it take you into a sort of like a different mental space that allowed you to live at the moment? I mean, it's remarkable.
Yes, it was. As I say, I'd stepped outside of, you know, this whole kind of mortality that we live under, you know, and like, you know, you're walking in through crowded streets, and you're seeing all the other people, and you're thinking, wow, man, these poor people, they're all living under the threat of death. Mm. But not me, because it's sorted out for me. So,
wow. That's amazing. So it kind of, it sort of brought you down to, I'm alive. You say you use the word free there. That must have been almost liberating by the sound of it.
Well, it was wonderful, and it just led to so many fantastic experiences. I mean, I decided to, right, I've got a few months left. I've got money in the bank. I'm just going to go places that I want to go and do what I want to do. And one of my favourite places is actually Japan, and that was one of the first things I did. I went to Japan. It was really good because I thought, you know, first class, you know, stay at really good hotels, because, you know, I didn't have to save my money anymore.
Yeah.
And I did in Tokyo and Kyoto. I did a couple of gigs with Japanese musicians and benefit gigs for the tsunami had recently happened. Mm-hmm. And so I did these gigs to raise money for that. And all these gigs were just... I played with one of my favourite clubs, the place, one of my favourite gigs, the place in Kyoto. Mm-hmm. This place is a... There's a kind of indoor staircase that leads up from the stage up to the loft where the dressing rooms are. There's an old wooden place, right. It's an old sarco factory actually, mm-hmm. and I did this gig with the again we were Japanese musicians and man it was. It was packed out. All these gigs were, because the thing was that the news about me it was on the internet and everybody knew, so everyone was coming to see the scene.
A farewell tour, which wasn't in the end.
And I remember experiences of like playing this gig and like looking out across the audience and there's all these Japanese faces, like all people crying, you know. And then when we finished the show, we finished with this song, Bye Bye Johnny. And this chorus that goes bye, bye, bye. And you do it, when you're doing it, you're waving. And we were doing this, and we walked up this indoor staircase up to the dressing rooms. And you're looking out across the crowd, man. And as I said, I looked then, it's just all these faces of people in tears and that, and we're all waving and going bye, bye, bye.
Oh my God, that must have been so touching, though.
I tell you what, it felt great. It was just it felt so great. It was, you know, it was like a perfect. I wasn't sad at all. It was. I was just thinking that. This is great show business.
Yes, indeed.
You know, waving and saying, singing bye-bye, everybody.
What a film that ending that would make. Wouldn't it be wonderful?
And the thing was, ridiculously, at the last moment, my life was saved.
Yes, it kind of spoiled it in a way, didn't it?
Well, it was just another. And then bad things happened. Like towards the end, like Roger Daltrey got in touch with me and said, "Look, man, we should do an album together." And I remember saying to him, "Well, we better do it quick." I was in my last couple of months, and. In fact, we did do it quick. We made this album in 10 days, I think. And it was the second best-selling album of that year. It went... It was like a gold disc. It was only George Michael, I think, who sold more.
Oh, my word.
That year. And that was,
wow.
You know. Wilco Johnson, and you're listening to Cat Tales.
The strange thing for you must have really been the fact that you're doing your farewell tour, but then everybody's suddenly writing about you, aren't they? They're talking about the fact that, you have only got a few months to live, or so you thought at the time. And it's almost like seeing your obituary being written in front of your eyes, isn't it? You know, did it surprise you how warm people were and what they said about the influence that you'd had?
Well, it's really hard to kind of remember what was going down then. It was kind of different from the last couple of years where I've been locked in this room. the fact of my illness and my impending death, you know, it was in all the newspapers. I went to Japan, personally, I went to Japan. By the time I came back from Japan, I was in every newspaper, front page of Sunday Times and you name it, you know, every newspaper got things. So I probably just in that instant became better known than I'd ever been.
It's possible.
Now I'm going to die.
Yes. Oh, how ironic is that, Wilco? I mean, really, you wait all your life for that moment to be like front page of everything, and then you think, oh, what a bastard. Yeah. You know, it's like, this isn't fair.
Well, yeah, you know, the whole thing was just full of just silly stuff like that. You know, it was like all sort of stuff. I remember like doing the album with Roger. And it was at the end of the year was up, you know, and I didn't even think I would see that record released.
Yeah.
And then to be there and standing in this studio and thinking, wow, man, I'm in this studio making an album with somebody who was like a hero to me when I was learning to play, you know, like a star, you know, doing all that and just thinking, I'm really kind of thinking, and I'm going to die.
Yes.
And everything just seemed just really good and really bad, and and of course I didn't know that. In fact, no, actually, you're not going to die, because this character named Charlie Chan is going to turn up. And he's
you can't write this, can you? Oh my goodness,
Charlie Chan. Yeah, he's a cancer surgeon, and he told me what he would come up to me at a festival and told me what he wanted me to go to Adam Brooks Hospital and see Mr. Emmanuel Hugo, who is the chief transplant surgeon there. And he said I'd like you to go and see him. Because I'd got my diagnosis, and I thought, well, that's it. I'm not going back. I'm not sitting in hospital corridors for the last few months of my life. I'm just gonna, you know, go ahead. But seeing as Charlie was a cancer surgeon, and he came round, he came knocking on my door actually, and I went to see Mr. Hugo, and I found myself sitting there, and Mr. Hugo telling me he thought we could do it.
Wow.
And I'm sitting there, that man, after all this year, and I'm sitting there, and this is a guy, I mean, Mr. Hugo, what a guy. And he's sitting there explaining to me, and I'm thinking, is this guy telling me he can save my life?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, yes, he is. When I walked out of there, I was with a friend of mine, and we were just looking at each other, just laughing, because it was like,
my goodness.
I mean, it wouldn't have been accepted as an episode in a soap opera. It just came out of nowhere, you know.
Say
I mean,
it.
I just walked out of there laughing my head off, you know.
Yeah. It's almost like, you know, it's some of the ridiculous stories you see in these soaps. You know, this is one of them, isn't it? If somebody had written this, you'd be going, oh, for God's sake, wouldn't you? That's never going to happen. And yet it did.
Well really, it was exactly beyond that. You know, I'd never... During all the time this was happening, I never... I never indulged in any wishful thinking. You know, I just thought, okay, I'm going to die, and that that was acceptable to me, you know, like I could go along and start having quite a good time. And for the, I'd never entertained such a hope, and it just came out of nowhere. Yeah. And I did it. Like it was a 12-hour operation. Wow. They had, I don't know. Apparently, it was quite a revolutionary operation. It'd never exactly been done like before, like this. This tumor was on my stomach. It was huge. It was the size of a football. My stomach was bulging right out. I mean, I used to be embarrassed. Well, I'd go on stage, still playing, I didn't used to lift my guitar up behind my head and that like I used to, because you would see this great big lump on my side. In fact, when they took it out, it weighed 2 kilos.
Oh my God!
And it was the size of a melon.
Oh my God, Wilco, that's just amazing. It's like carrying around a baby for a whole year.
Yes. Well, yes, exactly. I mean, I did look pregnant.
Yeah. Well, at least you know how women feel now with that shape.
That's always amazed me. I remember when my wife was pregnant. You think, oh wow, you know that thing. But anyway, I've had a little go at that.
Now. Oh my word! How absolutely great! It's almost like the Monty Python sketch. Have you seen Life of Brian? When you're saying, one moment I'm a leper with a trade, next minute I'm cured. It's like you've ruined my trade. Jesus comes along and cures him. It's almost like that, isn't it? It's like 1 minute you are. You've got it straight in your head for the first time in your life. You've got your head round life. And then this all sort of like turns it upside down again. How did it feel afterwards? Did you feel that same elation that you described when you came out of the first consultation?
No, well, I mean, the thing is that either end of this experience, they're quite different things. I mean, at the start of it, there is this sudden... You're sitting there and a doctor says these words to you. You've got cancer, right? Words that we all dread, I suppose. And it's in an instant, bang, your consciousness is changed. But then at the other end of it, this operation was a massive affair. And I was in the hospital for weeks and weeks and weeks, recovering. And it's not an instant thing at all. In fact, you're lying in this bed, just connected up to tubes, and you're just full of morphine and just stupid, and you're not thinking anything really.
Yeah.
And it's just long and tedious. There's no instant wham like it started off
with. That's just amazing. I suppose then what you had was the long road to recovery, didn't you? Because that was a very intrusive, operation.
Yes, it was a drag, you know, really, really terrible. You know, not feeling anything. As I say, you're kind of full of all sorts of things, painkillers and whatnot. And unfortunately, I had a friend, a lady, Yuriko, who I knew, who when I went over to Japan at the beginning of it, she's a friend of mine, and she said to me, listen, I'm coming back with you to look after you while you're dying, right? In these last 2 or 3 months. So I said yes. I bought her a ticket, and she'd come back, and she was there, and she was great. She all those every day she would come into the she got a hotel room near to the hospital, and she'd just come in and sit by the bed, and I mean, I couldn't say anything. I'm just stupefied, but it was just great. She just sat there, from sort of midday till midnight.
What a little angel by your side. I mean, how lovely.
That was the idea that she would, when she initially came, said we were in Japan, she said, I'm coming back with you. The idea was that she would be with me for the last weeks of my life. you know, and she, you know, looking after me as I crumbled into sickness. And as it was, she just had the boredom sitting by this bedside with this, you know, idiot lying there covered in tubes.
Oh, dear. So after all this is over then, you know, you feel better. You know, throughout the whole period anyway, you were playing music, you were going on tour, weren't you? So afterwards, did you then think, what am I going to do now? Because I feel like I've done it all. Or did you go, actually, there's another list, here it is, this is what I want to do?
Well, I don't know. I mean, what do you do? You know, I mean, I never meant to be a musician. I mean, when I was 1970, I was a hippie in Kathmandu, you know, and thinking, well, I didn't know what. If someone said to me, you're going to be a musician, I said, no, I'm not. You know, I hadn't even thought of it. You know, and yet, I kind of got back and just bumped into Lee Brillo in the street and started Dr. Feelgood, and that was my life.
My goodness.
You know, and just stuck in it, you know. I mean, it's a pretty good kind of life, so I've never done anything else.
It's almost like serendipity, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, this last 2 years or whatever, this is lockdown, it's been really weird.
Yeah.
I mean, I've just, you know, just locked in indoors, and because I'm especially vulnerable and that, you know, first of all, I wasn't allowed to step outside the door at all. Right. So there I am, locked in this room. and that's okay. Oh, well, the lockdown's going to stop in 2 months or 3 months. And they go, no, it's not, it's on again. And then it goes on to, and then eventually there come a point where I just thought, I'm not going to think of myself as a musician anymore. It's stupid because, you know, like, I don't know if I'm ever going to actually, it's ever going to start again.
Really? Did it kind of make you feel like that? You know, I know a lot of people were adversely affected by the lockdown, weren't they? Because they were restricted, and the music industry particularly took a battering, didn't it? You couldn't go out, you couldn't do anything. So,
well, obviously, yes, that was it, you know, musicians, man, there were no gigs,
yeah.
You know, people couldn't go, so there I was, so, you know, I wasn't a musician anymore, I was an old geezer locked in the room,
yeah.
walking around and around.
Yeah, changing your identity again in life, it sort of, yeah, hits you, circumstances dictating to you, isn't it, really, what you're going to do?
Yes, you know, and it started again now, you know, we've just started doing gigs again, and I mean, that was like, you know, I'm thinking, like, so I'm not getting any younger, and you're thinking, well, I'm not going to be able to do it, you know, again, it's been 2 years since I got onto a stage.
Yes.
And I'm happy to say it all still works.
It all still works. Well, that's the main thing, Wilco, isn't it? I mean, that's terrific.
Yes.
And actually, does it feel good to be out there again? It's got to feel like that adrenaline rush.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, once I kind of found my feet, you know, first of all, it's a bit, it's a bit confusing. Poor old bloke, you know, what's he doing?
Well, you get rusty, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, rock and roll, you know, I mean, it's such a stupid thing. It's so simple and stupid, and it just feels so good. And all those years, you know, even after all these years, it just feels good.
That's amazing. But obviously you're meant to be in that industry because, you know, that sort of like chance meeting with Lee to produce Dr. Feelgood in the first place when you already had another career lined up and, you know, it sort of moves you in the direction you're meant to be in sometimes life. It gives you a nudge, doesn't it?
Well, that's, but I mean, I think, like I say, my whole life, if you kind of plot, it's just been a series of chance encounters, you know, whether it's a chance encounter on the street with Lee Brillo or a chance encounter with Mr. C.
Yeah, this is it, isn't it? And you know, looking at it like that, does it make you think that you know, it's almost pointless planning in a way, isn't it? Because it is going to be what it's going to be. Just roll with it, which actually is the essence of rock and roll anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, well, you know, when things are going along, you think, oh yeah, it was all meant to be. It was all, you know. But I mean, like, you know, like, I mean, there's been months and months and loads of time when I'm walking around in the utmost misery, you know, just when things ain't going right, you know. So there's nothing magic, you know. Sometimes it goes good, sometimes it goes bad.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, looking back at the Dr. Feelgood days, though, I mean that you know, you're a lad from Canvey Island. It's almost like, wow, this is a different world, getting into the success, going on Top of the Pops and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that, again, must have almost been like, is this real? Is it really happening?
Well, kind of. I mean, it was like, as I say, it was just something that, it was a chance encounter that we just decided to do it. I never, never thought that I would, I was actually a school teacher at the time when it first started, and I don't think I really wanted to spend my life doing that, but that's what I was doing at that moment. I didn't know what I was going to do. Somebody told me that I was going to be a musician. It just wasn't at all in the cards, you know. But that's what happened, and then we were just like any local band, and we played around Canvey Island in Southend for a couple of years, and we kind of got our thing, our style, and then we started playing in London, and of course we were all completely unknown.
Yeah.
And we went and started playing around the clubs and gigs in London, and of course we were pretty good and absolutely different from what everybody else was. I don't know what they were doing, but they weren't doing what we were doing, and we got very popular very quickly, and it didn't surprise me because we were pretty good, but And then it all went from there, and you think, wow, you know, that lasted a couple of years, and then we...
You went your separate ways, though, didn't you? I mean, that,
yeah.
Like so many bands before you, it happens, doesn't it? Because it's almost like you have that intense time, don't you? Success is really going, and did Dr. Feelgood just sort of like implode in between, you know, and that's it, we're over? Or, I mean, the Dr. Feelgood carried on without you, didn't they? So what was the story?
Well,
I mean, in a shadow of their former self, obviously.
I mean, they chucked me out of the band, right? And I mean, I don't know, it was so long ago, you know. They chucked me out of the band and I was absolutely abandoned. I was on my own, and I didn't know what to do. I just carried on, you know, but that was gone from me, you know. And they lost more than I did because, after they chucked me out, they were useless.
Of course they were.
I mean, dear, they were useless. And I'm just still going, it's still a band now, going, calling themselves Dr. Feelgood, right? There's not one of them that's an original member. Everybody in the band's been replaced about five times, and, well, they're frightful.
Yeah, it's kind of...
They're terrible.
Yeah, sort of like on living on the name, isn't it, really? It gets a bit sad, that, doesn't it?
Well, they didn't even make that name,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
No, that can't care about them, idiots.
Yeah. That must be annoying for you, though. I mean, I'd look there and think, you know, you're an absolute imposter. Stop using the name, just go and do something else. Do, you know, call yourself something different.
Well, it happened, and then I thought, right, I'm not going to... I just didn't think about them anymore, really.
Bye. suspicion creeping up inside of me. Sneaking suspicion just won't let me be.
Wilco Johnson, and you're listening to Cat Tales.
But I mean, you went on and did your own stuff, didn't you? Let's be honest.
Yeah, yes, you know, I did my own thing. Then I had Ian Dury asked me to join the Blockheads, and that was another great time. You know, not only was it great because they were a great band, and Ian was special. And I did a lot of great gigs, went around the world with them. And also that was where I made the acquaintance of Norman Watroy. And
yeah.
We've been working together ever since. And that's about 300 years, I think.
Yeah. You've got a special relationship after all that time, though, haven't you? I mean, that really is quite special, to be honest, especially with the music.
Absolutely. I mean, we're just, you know, just really good pals, you know, just all this, you know, all these years, just really good friends. And he's such a great player that it's like, wow.
Yeah.
He's a real kick.
Yeah.
Being on stage, you go 1, 2, 3, 4, Norman, that bass kicks in, and it's like, wow, you know, it's great. I just love it.
Brilliant. Well, tell me about your new album, because you've got this new album, Blow Your Mind. How new is this album, and what's different about it?
Well, it's not new at all now.
because of this,
and I can hardly remember. Anything about it? I mean, it was as I say, we had done the album with Roger Daltrey and called "Going Back Home." I've just remembered what that one's called, and that was very successful. And so the record company, we did it just the same producer, the same people, which is basically my band plus. A couple of other musicians, and also had to do it quickly. We did it at Rockfield Studio. Did it in 2 weeks.
Wow!
One day we had 2 weeks with a day, 2 weeks with a day off, so it's like 13 days. And I think it's the best thing I've ever done. Yeah, yeah. Blow Your Mind.
Wow!
It's it'd blow your mind, and I think you should be, you know. But that seems that's all before the lockdown. I mean, everything's starting anew, so yes, people should get this record and listen to it.
They should, because that is it is still your latest work. But are you thinking then, now you've got the lockdown out the way, you're back on the road and you're feeling the music again, are you looking at maybe recording some new stuff, or are you just going to concentrate on doing those tours and getting that kick?
I think every time I've ever done a record, it sort of all happens all of a sudden. You suddenly realise there's a record coming. You know, the thing was with Roger, the Roger got in touch and said, you know, we'll do an album, and I was making jokes like, well, man, we better do it quick. My time was nearly up, you know, and that was great. Just doing it so quick. There was no time to sit there puzzling about it. You know, as I say, it was 10 days. I think we did it.
Wow!
So we called in, two tracks every day.
Wow.
Yeah, no time to mess about.
or have fun in between. I mean, really, it was all serious work. Yeah. Let's get it down there.
and when to do this Blow Your Mind, I thought, well, we'd do it the same.
Yeah.
We got the same musicians.
I tell you what it makes me think, though. It's almost like sometimes the best things come from those moments of pressure, don't they?
Absolutely. It's like the way we're recording, you do it live in the studio. You know, you just set the band up and play, and they record it. Bang, you do it in one take. You know, you don't spend days overdubbing things and on any track you'll hear one guitar, one set of drums, one bass, one piano, you know, and it's all done at once.
It's that sort of old-fashioned way.
Yeah, and I was writing the songs. As I said, I can't have to write songs when you have to.
Mm.
I was writing the songs as we were doing them. You know, we'd be going in the studio, bash out a backing track, and then go back to my room and write the words.
Wow, that's really organically done, isn't it? That's sort of like of the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, it's one of those.
And the thing is, you've got, as I say, there's no point in being artistic about it. You've got to do it, right?
Yeah, no time to waste, isn't it? That's the way it is.
No.
Yeah, I like that. I like that philosophy, Wilco. So, you know, how would you like to be remembered? I mean, you've cheated death, and you've been on Game of Thrones. You were on as well, weren't you? I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
that was amazing. So, how would you like to be remembered when it does all the?
I don't care. You know, would I like to be remembered? I don't know. I mean, it's like rock and roll is a thing that happens now. Bam! You know, there it is. That's it.
Yeah.
I've had a good time. I hope I've got a few more good times left in me yet. You know, I'm happy with that. I don't, you know, people can forget about me once I've gone.
Oh, not at all, because your wonderful music, your legacy will always live on.
I'll be hugely flattered lying there in my grave.
Listening to it all from afar.
Yeah, so come and see it live, because it's a good show and people can have a good time.
Oh, absolutely. Every time they see you, and as you say, the team that you've got around you in the band, I mean, good grief. I mean, it's a fabulous night out. And I've got the dates here in front of me, so I'm going to point everybody to your website, because they're all listed down there at wilcojohnson.com, aren't they? So...
Oh,
they've got to go, they've got to book it, and they've got to see you, and yeah, you've got to feel that energy again in the audience, haven't you?
Yes, you know, and I'm still here, folks. So slowly, midnight shine.
for listening to me, Kat, and my guest today, Wilco Johnson. The tracks featured are Roxette by Dr. Feelgood, Going Back Home by Wilco Johnson and Roger Daltrey from their album Going Back Home, and Say Goodbye from Wilco Johnson's album Blow Your Mind. To learn more about Wilco and his music, visit wilcojohnson.com, and to listen to this and to other tales, visit cattails.co.uk.
You've been listening to Cat.